Quicksilver Publishing presents Night Choir by Tom Withers, read for you by the author. In the beginning, there was sound. Nobody knows how the song started. There are many theories, but none of them are any good. Was it always playing on the outskirts of humanity? Did it call generations of children out of their beds and into the woods to join the choir? Probably not. That's the sort of thing someone probably would have heard about, right? Most of us learned about the song in the spring of 2023. The first major sign was just a string of irreverent internet memes about all of the people who were going missing at night. It didn't seem to have any rhyme or reason to it. Men, women, and children, old and young, rich and poor, people from all walks of life and all around the world just up and left their homes in the middle of the night and were never seen again. The only thing the disappearances had in common was the song. Neighbors heard people singing, like a Christmas choir off in the distance, some shapeless, wordless song. Nobody seemed to know how to describe the melody. Some said it sounded sad, while others said it sounded angry. Some said it sounded like a military marching cadence, while others said it sounded like a lone voice singing over lost love. As spring turned to summer, the nighttime disappearances began to grow more and more common. Suddenly, rather than a single person leaving their home in the night, entire neighborhoods would vanish, their homes abandoned, and their front doors left swinging in the wind. During the day, we would all go out and search for the missing people. The authorities were under tremendous pressure all around the world to find answers, but not only were there no answers, there were no bodies. The people were simply gone without a trace when the sun came up. Night began to fall with terror as those who remained, through some deep, primitive human instinct, learned to fear the song of the night choir as it roved through the streets. We all somehow understood that, wherever these people were disappearing to, the next night they joined their voices to the choir. We also knew that, regardless of what the experts might say, to hear the words the choir was singing would compel any one of us to go out into the dark to join them. Of course, those self-proclaimed experts had their theories. The theories ranged from extremely elaborate prank to satanic cult and everywhere in between. The pointy-headed among us believed that it might be some sort of parasitic virus, or even that climate change was somehow to blame. This last theory surprised nobody, since climate change was the go-to boogeyman for all of the world's problems back then. Prank, cult, or Mother Earth's revenge, it never mattered to those of us who simply lived in fear that one night we'd hear the words of the song and go missing. Of course, just because we were terrified didn't mean that human beings stopped being ingenious. In spite of the politics and fear-mongering that the elites spent their time on, people in comment sections all over the internet came to a collective consensus that the best thing to do was to take measures to make sure that you couldn't hear anything at night. Simple wisdom is often the best wisdom. Stories began to spread of a little deaf girl waking up in her bed one morning to find that everyone she knew had left in the night. People began to soundproof their bedrooms and wear earplugs to bed. Of course, these efforts were partially thwarted when public health officials claimed that earplugs were ineffective in order to build up their own stockpiles at the expense of the public. Thankfully, it's not that hard to find something to stick in your ears to drown out the sound. Or so we thought. We later learned that the same deaf girl went missing a few nights later. The choir had more than one tool at its disposal, it seemed. Apparently, there was something about seeing the night choir as well that put you in danger. It was easy enough to avoid that, though, since they never opened doors or broke windows. The number of overnight disappearances began to decline for a time as people took measures to block out the sound of the song. Every night before sundown, people would return to their homes and blast music, turn the TV on full volume, and cover their ears. Those caught outside when the sun went down would be gone before morning, but those who were able to drown out the sound would be just fine when the sun came up. Then, the violence started. Maybe we were all just scared enough at first that our collective vices were put on the back burner for a while. But it didn't last. Human ingenuity is a strange thing. The same instinct, intuition, and intelligence that prompted us to protect ourselves began to raise its ugly head as we came up with brand new ways to kill each other. The law has always been in an arms race against human ingenuity and our capacity for new and interesting evils. Suddenly, we had to decide whether it was murder to sabotage someone's power at night by shooting out a transformer, knowing that without their loud music, they were likely to go missing before the morning. What about taking someone's front door off its hinges at sunset, or smashing their bedroom windows? If you had someone you wanted to get rid of, all you had to do was make sure that something went wrong with their protection strategies, and they'd be out of your hair forever. Turns out, all you had to do was tie someone to a tree or drive them out into the middle of nowhere at sunset, and by the time the sun rose on the next day, your problems would be solved. There wasn't even a body to dispose of. With the combination of run-of-the-mill murder and widespread gang violence and looting, society broke down almost without a fight. It turned out that there wasn't all that much keeping it together in the first place. I remember being completely astonished by how quickly the United States of America suddenly became just the States of America, and then a few weeks later, the City States of America. The combination of a loss of unity and the sheer loss of manpower meant that stuff started to break. At first, it was simple things, stoplights, potholes, and local power outages. Before long, there were rolling blackouts, and you were lucky if you could get a cell phone call out. The cities fell to ruins quickly as they ran out of food and resources. Every day there was spent in desperation, looting, killing, and trying to escape. Each night, fewer and fewer people made it to safety. I was one of the lucky Americans who didn't live in a large city or metro area, though I probably wouldn't have told you I was lucky before the song started. Idaho Falls doesn't have much going for it. It's not exactly a small town, but it's not what you'd call a metropolis. It's got everything you'd need in a town with none of the bells and whistles. Most of us don't have to share walls with our neighbors, but most of us don't have much of a backyard either. It's a relatively inhabited oasis in a desert of rural farmland with tiny communities dotted every 10 miles or so. Idaho is a state not famous for its excellent infrastructure, but the power went out and stayed out early on, and it wasn't long until the roads were basically unusable. Of course, most of us had generators that we could fire up at night to keep our sound protection up. During the daytime, we'd pull together as a community to keep things as tidy and orderly as possible. We kept schools open and did our best to maintain law and order for as long as we could. Even though the classrooms became more and more empty and fewer coworkers showed up to the office every day, we all did our best to soldier on. It helps to try to pretend it wasn't happening. I was surprised how little we talked about it back then. Some of us even managed to maintain a certain level of luxury through it all. Somehow the internet stayed up and running. Some major cable outlets were able to stay on the air. Many of my neighbors never even had to stop watching their favorite evening news programs. In the morning, they'd head out into the sunshine and argue about which political party was more to blame for the apocalypse, as though any of that mattered anymore. Those people were the unfortunate ones, as it turned out. As I said, I was lucky. I decided early on that I was sick of hearing the crackpot theories and the blaming back and forth. For all the noise, it seemed like nobody had any real answers. So, I unplugged from everything. I ditched my phone, unplugged my internet router, and swapped my internet-based music playlist for good, old-fashioned CDs played through a huge, old-school sound system powered by my generator. It turns out that old, off-grid sound system saved my life. I slept like a baby through the worst terrorist attack in the history of mankind. For all that they terrified us, the night choir never seemed to do anything but sing their awful song over and over again. They never broke down doors, smashed windows, set fire to houses full of sleeping people, or any of the other things you might expect a willful, malicious force to engage in. They just sang until the sun rose, and then disappeared without a trace back to wherever it was they hid during the day. You can say what you want, but I know in my heart that the night choir itself did not orchestrate the attack on the night of June 14th, 2023. If you ask me, it was nothing more than regular old human evil. Maybe it was the government. Maybe it was a foreign adversary. Maybe the corporate bosses decided that there was no saving humanity. Who knows? For me, my money's on the neck-bearded nihilists that have been plaguing modern society since the dawn of the internet. Whoever it was, they all but brought humanity to an end one night as they simultaneously took control of the airwaves. Every news channel, every website, every radio station. Somehow, these people took control of everything and decided to play a live audio recording of the song on air, everywhere, all at once. Suddenly, the TV and music on full blast became the enemies of the people that were using them for protection. After that, the world as we knew it pretty much ended. The internet went out. I didn't know that was a thing that could happen, but sure enough it did. The power went out for good, the trucks stopped running, the grocery stores emptied, and the hospitals shut down. During the day, you could see streaks of light across the sky as hundreds of satellites began falling out of orbit. Livestock starved in their pens or were eaten by roving packs of suddenly ownerless dogs. Everything that humanity had built over countless generations was gone overnight. For the first few months, I thought I was completely alone. I never saw a trace of humanity, even at the grocery stores I frequented for food and supplies. During the day, I'd build up my defenses as much as possible. I moved down into my basement and covered the entire ground floor of my house with spray insulation foam. At night, I fired up the generator in its own custom ventilated room, cranked up the music on my old sound system, and covered my ears with the giant plastic and rubber earmuffs I used to go shooting with. There were a couple of nights during those days where I'd take a deep breath, pull my ear protection off, and turn the music down ever so slightly. I could hear the night choir singing outside my house. No, I could practically feel them singing. Thousands, maybe tens of thousands of voices singing in unity, beckoning me out to join them. I wanted to. I'm ashamed to admit that now, but as I sat there facing down a lifetime spent talking to my dog Kaiser and eating food out of a can, eventually I lost hope. I'd inevitably think of something that might make life worth living, like feeding Kaiser in the morning, and then I'd put the earmuffs back on and go to sleep. Nighttime was always the hardest. My will to live always seemed to rise with the dawn. Once the sun was up and the coast was clear, Kaiser and I would climb up the ladder from my basement bunker, hop in the truck, and go out in search of food and, hopefully, other survivors. At first, we found plenty of food, though I didn't know how long I'd be able to eat ravioli out of a can and stay sane. But we never seemed to see any indication that there were any other people around. Of course, I grew up reading about the zombie apocalypse. My friends and I would talk about our plans, who we'd meet up with, where we'd go, how we'd come out on top eventually. The plans always involved racing through a burnt-out hellscape full of trashed cars and walking corpses. I was living through an apocalypse for sure. But the thing that surprised me most about it was just how neat and tidy everything was. I'm sure there were plenty of cities that were completely destroyed by their inhabitants as they were consumed by the night choir, but Idaho Falls wasn't one of them. Sure, there was the occasional smashed storefront window, but there were hardly any cars abandoned in the middle of the road. It might have been easier for me to process things if the town was a smoking ruin. Instead, it was almost exactly the same as I had always remembered it, only completely empty. It was driving me insane, and I knew it. I could feel my sanity starting to fray at the edges. When I drove past the movie theater on Hit Road, I'd see people walking in the corner of my eye, only to have them vanish as I turned to look at them. When Kaiser and I went grocery shopping, he'd walk alongside me as I pushed a cart down the aisles. Most everything was still right where people had left it, organized well enough. Obviously, the dairy and meat didn't keep for long, so Kaiser and I kept away from that side of the store. Apart from that, though, everything was fine. I carried a gun with me when I went out, of course, but not so I could shoot any person I ran into. If I'm honest with you, I mostly shot dogs. Cruel, I know, but they were all emaciated, mangy creatures that would dart out of the shadows and lunge at Kaiser. I thought about taking a couple of dogs home, but Kaiser was my only friend back then, and I didn't like the idea of sharing him with someone else. I didn't want the dogs to talk about me while I sat and couldn't understand them. Crazy, I know, but as I said, I wasn't in my right mind at the time. I'm probably still not in my right mind. Every time I ran into town, I made sure to fill up my pickup truck with useful supplies. It probably wasn't necessary for me to be hoarding things in my basement, since I had the whole town to myself anyway. But some habits are hard to break, and I figured if I ever got sick or injured, it would be best if I could stay in the basement for an extended period. September 3rd was a day like any other day. It was a Sunday, as though that mattered anymore, but for some reason I still kept track. Kaiser and I were out on our regular grocery run. I normally started the day by driving around town a little bit to see if I could spot any signs of life. Idaho Falls isn't a huge city by any means, but there are a lot of different residential nooks and crannies. I determined that I'd canvass every one of them in search of other survivors. If I didn't find any by the time I was done, well, I didn't know what I would do. Since it was Sunday, and a beautiful fall Sunday at that, I decided that I'd drive down the tree streets over in the numbered blocks. These roads are narrower than most in town, but the older houses and the giant trees made it one of my favorite spots to cruise through. After that, I headed for Broadway Street and took a right just before the bridge over the Snake River. This was objectively the most beautiful spot in Idaho Falls, and Kaiser and I rolled down the street with the windows open. I was looking out the window at the man-made waterfalls Idaho Falls was named for as we started down Memorial Drive when suddenly I heard a gunshot from somewhere to my right. Kaiser started barking his head off and I stomped on the brakes. My heart began to pound in my chest as I realized two things simultaneously. First, I was not alone. Second, whoever else was here was shooting at something, or someone. I hauled on the steering wheel and turned right, then accelerated through the parking lot. Alarm bells in my head were blaring, telling me that I was most likely heading into danger, but I didn't care. I was so desperate to see another human that I wouldn't mind if they pointed a gun at me. If they would only speak to me a little before they shot me, that would be enough. Again, not in the most mentally healthy frame of mind at this time. I started to slam on the horn as I searched around for the source of the gunshot. I must have looked like a madman peeling out in the parking lot and honking my horn. In answer to my honking and squealing, I heard loud shouts off to my right coming from the Bonneville County Courthouse. I turned and rumbled over the curb, cut across the grass, and pulled to a stop inches before slamming into a tree. I jumped out of my car and ran towards the courthouse steps. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the group of people standing there above me at the top of the stairs. I laughed out loud and shouted a friendly greeting to them, though I'm told what I actually shouted was incomprehensible gibberish. As I made my way up to the base of the stairs, I counted five of them, all wearing long-sleeved black shirts and brown cargo pants. Cute, I thought. They're all matching. I guess I thought they must have just been good friends or something. Looking back, I can't believe I walked right up to them, shouting my head off, gesticulating like a lunatic. It's a miracle they didn't shoot me. If it weren't for Sarah, they probably would have.
That's close enough, stranger.
The man in the middle had thick arms, a thicker gut, and an even thicker mustache. He pointed a massive revolver at me, and I heard him cock back the hammer as the gun leveled. It had been a while since I last stared down the barrel of a gun, but judging by the angle, I'd guess it was pointed right between my eyes. I put my hands up, of course. For some reason, we all seem to know what to do when someone threatens us with imminent violence. Kaiser growled menacingly, and I hushed him. Fortunately, he's always been a good and obedient dog, So he settled down and simply whimpered quietly beside me. Whoa, easy, friend, I yelled out, surprised at how my own voice sounded. I had no idea how long it had been since I had last spoken. Who are you? This time it was a woman's voice. Later I would learn that her name was Lisa, and that no matter what I did, she would always find a way to dislike me. My name is Adam, I answered. Adam who? I couldn't help but laugh at that one. How many Adams do you know? I thought it was a witty answer. It turned out that, as luck would have it, they actually knew a couple of different Adams. They just stood in silence, so I answered, lying. My name is Adam Smith, like the economist. They just stared blankly at me. The big, bald man on the far right, whose name was also Adam, folded his arms and glared at me. You want more information? I asked, trying not to let my nerves show in my voice. Fine. My name is Adam Spencer Smith, and I was born on December 7th, 1992, in Salt Lake City, Utah. My mother's name was Julia Spencer, and my father's name was John Smith. I had a sister named Sydney and a brother named Alan. That good enough? More silence. Finally, the exceptionally attractive brunette on the far left snorted and began to giggle. Her comrades turned and glared at her, and then at me, but I didn't notice. I was too busy falling in love. I'll never know whether it was just the fact that hers was the first woman's laughter I had heard in months, or whether it was down to her exquisite feminine physique and beautiful green eyes, but I was dead to rights from the moment I saw her. It was like the clouds had parted and an angel had descended from on high. I'll never forget the first thing she said to me. Ass, she swore, causing me to flinch. Adam Spencer Smith, ASS, that's the fake name you say your parents gave you? Her explanation caused the others in the group to turn and smirk at me. My cheeks flushed, and for a moment, I hoped the heat of this goddess's mockery would burn me to ashes and scour my miserable carcass from the face of the planet. King, I mumbled. My last name is King. Suddenly, the back of my neck began to itch like crazy. I did my best to ignore it, since rubbing the back of your neck is something that guilty people do. Is that why guilty people do that? I wondered. Now the whole group was getting in on the laughter. Even the big man's whiskers began to twitch ever so slightly. I was embarrassed, but the fact that they were all having a good time seemed like a good sign. I decided to play along. Yep, A.S. King, as in, who is asking? I was talking too quickly, and I knew, but so what? At least I was making friends. My mom's maiden name really was Spencer, that's why it's my middle name. Also, I really do have a brother named Alan, or at least I did, but I don't have a sister, and my birthday is actually December 9th. I don't know why I lied about that. Maybe I was hoping it would make me seem more sympathetic. The sister thing, that is, not the birthday thing. Now I was laughing along with them. It's nice to meet you, Adam, the angel said, her high, clear voice sending shivers down my spine. Though, I wish we'd met under nicer circumstances. In an instant, the laughter died away and the group returned to stoic somberness. I was very conscious that I was the last one to stop laughing, and I kicked myself. This is as beautiful a day as any, I began to say, gesturing to the sky, the trees, and the town around us. As I pivoted, my left foot peeled off of the pavement. It was sticky, like I had stepped in a patch of dried, spilled soda. I looked down and saw dark red blood pooling around my boots, and I traced the flow back to the open head wound of the man who lay crumpled at the foot of the courthouse steps. To my horror, I saw Kaiser happily lapping up the blood from the pavement, inches away from the dead man's open, unblinking brown eyes. My mouth went dry, and I looked up at the five men and women dressed in black and brown. With the extra information, my brain suddenly painted a new and much more sinister picture of them. It was as though their entire countenance had suddenly shifted. Even the beautiful brunette now seemed more like a dark angel soaked in the blood of the innocent. Without another word or thought, I turned and ran back towards my truck. I didn't make it two steps before another gunshot split the air. We hope you have enjoyed this sample production of Night Choir by Tom Withers. Night Choir is available on Amazon, Kindle, and the audiobook is available on Audible. Thank you for listening and for your support of the author.
In the new book from author Tom Withers, enter a world where science blurs the line between human and machine. Human Cure, available on Amazon. In Human Cure, meet Ted and Amy. They're brilliant scientists and divorce partners. They're racing against time to find a cure for cancer. As they navigate disastrous experiments in a belligerent partnership, their work and their hearts are tested in ways they've never imagined. They're thrown into a world where incredibly lifelike bots work work alongside humans. They must overcome their personal and professional challenges to achieve their breakthrough. And when the stakes become personal for Amy, their quest takes on a whole new urgency. Human Cure is a sci-fi romance. It's also a story that explores the essence of humanity in an increasingly artificial world. Author Tom Withers dedicated Human Cure to his mother and for all those battling cancer. Proceeds from the book will be donated to cancer research. Human Cure from author Tom Withers. Available on Amazon and Kindle, paperback, hardcover, and Kindle Unlimited. Order your copy right now.